Welcome to the Exponentially Me podcast. Have you ever wondered if we can work better, if we get along better, and if leaders can really influence that? In this podcast, these are some of the questions we will be answering. We'll be talking to some amazing people from all around the world, not just thinkers on this, but the doers, giving you practical information that can make you a better colleague and even a better leader. My name is Dixon Ball, and today I'm talking to Rineke Deelstra. Now, one of the things that's always struck me about Rineke is she's not somebody that brags. She's done some amazing things in her life. She's led large-scale transformations within government. She has consulted and coached leaders at the highest level in local government and in civil service. And at the same time, part-time, she's also qualified as a clinical psychologist. It's just one of those things. She just gets on with it and gets it done. And in such a way that everybody just feels comfortable with her. Now, most coaches probably achieve this, but Rineke is really special where this is concerned. She's got a way of helping you see a different perspective without it being forced. And I think that's an amazing ability to have. Now, can you imagine how wonderful that is in a time of crisis? So today we talk about what leadership in a crisis means. What is the impact on top leadership, middle management, and on the employees that work with the clients or the customers? So we start talking about what does it mean now for hybrid working? What is the scope of what we term as crisis or in a crisis? How do we get our scope as clearly as possible? Then we talked about what it is to impress leaders. We then go on to talk about what working with teams means for their improvement during a time of crisis. Talk about how do you interact with your employees in a time of crisis? How does confidence feature into this? And how can reflection with others and bouncing ideas of others help you? We also talk about how lonely it is at the top. And how about the importances of cognitive empathy? And then looking at triggers and previous traumas and how that feeds into a crisis. We also do a quick stop where we talk about coaching versus psychiatry or psychology. And we talk about the attitudes towards that. But also attitudes towards security, peace of mind, vulnerability, and even mental health in leaders. Well, I hope you enjoy this episode with me, because it's always lovely to talk to Rineke, and I think you guys will enjoy this as well. Welcome to the Exponential Leadership Podcast, Rineke. So great to have you today. I know you have great experience when it comes to leadership in crisis or leading in a crisis, and I'm so grateful that you're willing to join us today and talk a little bit to that.
Thank you, Eckstein. I really appreciate your invitation.
So let's get cracking. Let's think. What would you say is the stuff or the things that leaders struggle most with when there is a crisis?
Oof, that's quite a question. I think it's about how big is it and how deep is it to get the overview. I think that's the most difficult part, to know when something is starting as a crisis. So my experience...
So basically to get an idea of the scope.
Yes, because you don't know what areas of the organization will be... touch with the crisis and how deep it will go. So for the clients of the company or for the employees. So it's difficult at first moment to know how big it is. And you want to have control. So that's a period of insecureness, I guess.
Do you think that need for control helps in situations like that?
Well, it's... you always want a bit of control, but the way you have control in the crisis, and it depends on the kind of crisis, of course, but you have to look what kind of control you need in a specific situation. So with the COVID crisis, there was quite a different control mechanism necessary, because you can't control people looking if they are working. You have to trust them. And so you need to know, okay, are you able to work? Are you comfortable to work at home, et cetera? So you've got quite different controls than in a normal situation.
Do you think we're going to a normal situation again, or are we going to be stuck in hybrid mode?
Well, I hope we're stuck in a hybrid mode, and for different reasons, because I think first it shows we are very flexible. If something is happening worldwide, so I was really impressed how flexible every person is to cope with the situation. And I'm not talking about only sitting at home in the lockdowns, because that's not a healthy situation. But I really appreciated the difference in focus of management and leaders to look at people. They are doing the work. So you have to trust them, and you have to facilitate them. Are they able to do it? And I don't want to go back from the top-down management way of control, because I don't believe in it.
So when we have to make the transition, I mean, if we were all taught a certain way of leadership and grew into a certain way of leadership and management, and now we've hit the crisis with COVID, and now we're in this hybrid scenario. So what do you think are the different characteristics we now need by comparison to what we used to need as leaders?
Well, that's a beautiful question. I think that every consultancy or leadership firm is thinking about this, but my humble guess for this is I think you need leaders who are confident by themselves, so not dependent on all the external stuff and all the external controls. And when someone is authentic, confident by him or herself, they are also able to give the trust and the confidence to other people. So the more coaching, facilitating way of leadership is, I think, the new world. And I always talk about the hierarchy upside down, because the core business is what all the employees do, and we management leaders are just getting the vision, what's the direction, but the employees only need coordination principles to do their job, to see each other, to talk about work, etc. But the real work is between the employer and the employee and the client. So I think all our focus has to be on in that way. Do you understand what I try to explain?
Yes. I think that facilitative leadership, or the creating the context for other people to work well, instead of doing the manual controls like we might have been used to in the past, is what you mean. Is that right?
Well, a bit. The difference is in a lot of organizations, top management, and now I use the word top management. It's different for me from leaders. But top management is used to look at the organization from the top to the bottom. And they organize their own well-being, their own controls on their level. In my opinion, you have to turn the organization, just flip around, and you look at what do the people need, what are the tools they need, what are the ICT facilitation they need to do their job, and what coordination is necessary to let them do their job the best, and what coordination, if you have a big company, is necessary to get all the controls together. So your whole point of view is flipped around. It's not from your looking down to the organization, but it's looking at, okay, this is the core business. What do I have to facilitate to make this the best?
So that means, from what I understand from you, is that we need a perspective change. And that perspective change is not something that comes automatically all the time. What would you suggest leaders do to help them facilitate in that perspective change?
Well, there's one big thing leaders have to overcome. And I think we use the word top management because leaders are different for me. And it's the ego. So if you are the biggest one because you are the top management and you really live for that, well, that's really a hurdle to flip your perspective. And so I really think authentic leadership is necessary to do this. And I think the world is waiting for this way of looking at the world, at organizations, and how people act together.
There's one thing we have in the Netherlands called Bolder, which there's a lot more consultative in a way. Do you think that in the Netherlands, where we're more used to this, this might be an easier transition?
No, we have also egos in the Netherlands. You can polder a lot with a big ego. So it's for me, the ego, and it's always a difficult word to use, but it's about I want to arrange everything in my way of thinking. Employees have the best ideas what is necessary in relation to clients or in relation to their processes because they are doing it every day. So it's a bit arrogant to think on top management level you can fill in exactly what the employees had to do. Ask them. And really, that's what I learned a lot. If you just ask people, what do you think what's necessary? Okay, how do we arrange it? And I've never heard saying someone something crazy or out of context or out of borders what's necessary. They just want to do their best in their job because everybody has got the intention to give their best.
I think I saw that in call centers, especially where people tend to work with clients quite directly. And in the call center agents, they didn't understand why certain decisions were made at top level because they knew that that was not necessary for the clients or to get the job done on a daily basis. So I think that is an interesting thing. The thing is just how do we get top leadership or top management to talk to employees? What do you think we'll need to do be the mind change or the perspective change for that?
Well, a lot of organizations are working in different ways. So the way of working is changing, agile, and that is also working with multidisciplinary teams, and you give demos to show what's the outcome. So it's already changing a bit. But I think an investment is necessary for top-level management to become a leader. And it's about learning to become confident who you are. It's enough. You don't have to make yourself bigger than you are. You just can be yourself. And when you are just yourself and you don't need all external things to show, but just be there, your employees really sense it. And then a new conversation is able to grow.
What kind of help do you think we can provide for top leadership to help make this transition?
I think you've got new ways of learning. I think a lot of the alpha science parts are necessary to make the way of thinking different, like philosophy, thinking about psychology, and also experience with it. It's also about knowing how you react in situations, how you react physically when stress is coming, what you do, mirror yourself, look at how people react on you, all that kind of stuff you can learn. You can be aware and then you can, well, change a bit of your common behavior to another way of handling stuff.
There is this one organization that I'm aware of that does both individual coaching as well as group coaching. And it's a lot of people that are executive or leadership coaches. But none of what I've seen so far seems to focus on what you're saying, that ability to get someone to understand the relational aspect of their interaction with the organization. Do you think that's something, and how do you think that can be done, for instance, in coaching?
Well, I think I don't have the answer right away. I'm looking also for what's the best way to make the transfer, because you want to learn, help people to learn it in their daily work situation. So I'm looking for interventions just in daily situations. So you've got a meeting, and what is necessary to get the meeting in a different way? So it needs a lot. It needs the safety to be really yourself, the safety to learn, to make mistakes. Top level, I'm thinking about, because we ask this from our employees a lot, but on top level, it's quite a different thing. And then you have to learn to act to each other, to take each other way of thinking seriously, and build on their way of thinking instead of say, no, it's not true, and now I see it completely different, and bang, okay, so you have another side of the conversation. No, oh, that's interesting. Oh, why do you think about that? Oh, never thought about it. And then you are working together, and so you can work on high performance teams, also on high top management level, but it needs this, and it's, I'm looking also for the best answer for this.
I'm glad that we're trying to turn that corner. I think one of the things that I've been advocating for is to try and help people to become, in a way, more human. Firstly, I think when it comes to those kind of interventions, that sense of trust, so being able to be vulnerable, especially at top leadership level, is hard, because you tend to sort of cover for your own wickets, and you tend to, it's not always the most trusting environment, especially in larger organizations. And to create that level of trust, I think, is quite an interesting challenge. Do you have any tips, maybe one or two things that people can try that you've already found that works?
You just need one in a team who's able to really say, I really want to share something, and it's important for me. And directly when someone in a team says something like this, you feel the energy, whoa, what's going to happen? And if then the leader of the team say, okay, everything down now, we are listening, then you create directly the best situation. When someone, and if this the leader of the team says, well, now we are not going, okay, that's over. So it's very, very subtle. And you need a lot of braveness. Is that a good word?
Bravery, yes.
Yes, bravery to do this. So it's really showing yourself just from your heart. And these are the words, it's not so common on top level. I must say, on the highest level, on board level, this kind of conversations is growing. But the level just below, there it's more difficult. They feel the challenge, the political drive, all the bad stuff.
So would you say that is the senior leadership teams just below the C-suite?
Well, I see the C-suite just below. I look at the top level. So there, I see a lot of top leadership. These are people who are thinking about life, thinking about future, thinking about how is my organization, my company directing? What do I have to do because of all the climate, sustainability, et cetera, et cetera. And also about how we act to each other. But level below, just below, they're in the arena of, well, it's mine and it's my budget and I want this and he doesn't want to do that, etc. So that's, they're the quarrel starts.
So basically people that are jockeying for position or for attention and or status or power, trying to impress those in the C-suite. And so I think if we take that as an assumption, then it might be interesting to also look not just at the C-suite itself, but also how they interact with those that report into them. What kind of things do you think we can do to help facilitate that?
Well, I really love to facilitate teams. So it's and teams and on personal level. And I agree with you. You don't have to only look at the C level. You also have to look at the management level below, but also the interaction between them, because there it's happening. There is, if a C level shows another behavior, directly everything will change. So in my opinion, you have to, and that's what I'm looking for. What's the best answer for this? You have to be in the organization at the meeting and directly reflect on what's happening now. Okay, what are we listening at? Did you hear this? And that's something, someone must invite you to do that. And if that is possible, you can learn a lot with each other.
I think one of the things you told me before was that the way that you've interacted in these teams, in that you just sit there and watch and observe for a while, just to first see how the team works. And I think it's a very interesting thing that we don't always, as coaches or team coaches or leadership coaches, get invited to do, is sit there and just watch.
But sitting there,
how do you think that has helped you?
Yes, but it's also difficult to be invited just to sit there and watch, because all the members of the team must feel safe by my existence over there in the team. So just sitting there and looking, it can freeze people in their normal behavior. So what I always do in this kind of situations, first I say to the leader, if I see something and it's really something worthwhile to learn, I don't reflect to you in the whole team. I do it a part of it, because you're also very vulnerable as a leader. But I also say I ask the people in the team, do you like me to reflect directly to you? Do you like me to do it in the group? Do you like me to do it individually? Surprisingly enough, they say, oh, just please do directly. So then we make an appointment. Okay, time out. What happened right now? And then we can talk about it. So that's a very fast way of learning.
Yeah, I think that immediate feedback, the moment something happens, and creating this timeout moments and the ability to halt the conversation and allow everybody to reflect, can be extremely good for learning, because it hasn't ebbed away and we haven't rationalized it away yet. I think one of the things that was really struck me is when I did this negotiation course at Harvard, we talked about the influence of adrenaline and sometimes how adrenaline can stay in your body for up to 20 minutes. And so when you have one of these arguments or really heavy situations, your body changes. The way that we record information becomes more snapshots instead of video. We lose certain senses. And afterwards, we rationalize to make those images that we have retained make sense for the narrative that we have. So when we do things like this in the moment, that narrative hasn't deviated yet from the current situation. So I think it's a very good technique that you use there. I like it.
Yes, and there's also a shadow side of it, because people count on you as a facilitator when you are there. So they are adjusting their behavior because you are in the room. And then you create a kind of dependency. So that's also difficult, how to give feedback, how to learn with each other, but not leaning on it.
You've not only consulted on senior leadership teams, you've also led organizations. What has been the biggest struggle for you in a crisis?
For me, it was the direct way to interact with employees, to know what's happening at core business. Because when I had an interim role as an on C-level, well, part of C-level, high level, let's say it that way, and there were a lot of levels of management below me. And for me, that was difficult because I want to sense how are the employees feeling, how are they working. And in a crisis, it's more important. So I needed to realize an atmosphere with the middle management to talk about everything what was happening, how they felt, how anxious they were, how tired they were. I had a big learning field during the corona period, because I couldn't talk with them at first, only on telephone, and it was an interim situation, so I didn't know the people and had to learn them to know by voice. And afterwards, Teams came, and that's great because you can do a lot. You can also sense a lot. You can see a lot of non-verbal communication, but people were not used to it, so they were sitting and waiting. And then how to make it open and how to interact and how to really get conversations, you know what's really happening. And for me, it was looking, it was experiencing, it was trying, making mistakes, everything.
But I've seen it in the past is that when we try and transcend those leadership levels, it's almost as if it's experienced as distrust, as if the middle management layer believe that they're not being trusted. That's why you want to talk to the employees. How did you tackle that?
Yes, and a middle management is the not recognized difficult position. I've also been middle manager. It's not easy, because you have to above and below, and it's never good enough. So it's really a level of stress, I guess. Well, what I did, I respect people in their position. So I don't want to hear, I don't go beyond middle management. I want situation to talk with employees and middle management. And I love when the middle manager invite me and say, okay, we are going to talk, let's share something. But then the middle manager must trust me. I won't punish him when someone says something wrong or stupid. Or no, it must be the atmosphere to be open and to learn. But that's what I love to do. And that took time to get that situation. And we had also an organization change. So that was also difficult for the middle management themselves, because their roles were changing very much. And I was very proud of them. When they talked about the change, they explained it to their people when I was with them. So I just had to sit and to listen.
I think it's really nice the way that I always love seeing the way that you react to people, because I think it's so beautiful. It's so warm and connecting and allowing for that vulnerability, which I think is something that coaches in general should have, that ability to make people feel safe and make them feel as if they are important. Yeah? Because if we're just doing it by rote and we're not doing it because we really care, people can feel
it. Yes, people are sensing.
What do you think is the role of cognitive empathy, or our ability to notice other people's emotions, in leadership?
Well, it's huge. It's really huge. If you are not aware of what's happening with people, if you're not listening, if you can't read nonverbal signals, if you don't sense the atmosphere in a room, you miss a lot. And if you only talk from your head, it's empty. And it's for, how can I explain? This is what I always tell when I facilitate teams or coach people or helping people. You have three instruments and they are so good and so helping you. You have your mind, and we are so focused in mental way of experiencing the world, but you also have your feelings. And the feelings are very beautiful because they are quick and they give you signals something is happening. I'm afraid. I'm happy. I'm sad. It's just a signal of you have to act, and your physics. And I really see a lot of people lost their connection with their body, so they don't feel in their body the tense. And I also coach and give a therapy for people, and I always ask, can you feel the your feet? Can you feel your big toe? And you see people think, feet. Oh, it's over there. Toe. They just feel it. And if you are able to use it in daily life, then you are just with yourself. And then you are open to let others be also themselves. So the three instruments for me are very important.
I think the few things there that I'd like to unpack that you say, which is interesting, when that feeling within the body, I mean, there's lots of research about all the interconnected pathways in our body and the neurons that are built up over time. So I'm a firm believer that as we go through experiences in life, those neurons are formed everywhere in the body, not only in the brain. And that when we feel something, we can sometimes have a memory or a trauma that is felt in a different part that is not necessarily rational. So the gut feeling actually is a feeling that we have where around our stomach area. And I'm wondering, how do we allow people to feel that? How do we explain that in a very rational world?
Just practicing. And I use it, little practices in team facilitation. Just sit, close your eyes, and just be here. Feel your body. It just is a very, very simple yoga kind of practices. But you directly sense the energy in the room is... And people are there, and they can breathe. And if you feel there's a lot of tension, you can always pause. It's just 2-3 minutes, nothing. And then they, nice. And it's true. I also, there's a lot of research of your guts. That's your second brain. And it's so a very beautiful instrument also. It's so direct. It's so quick. Much quicker than your way of thinking. Your brain is slower. Your mental, we always think it's the quickest part, but it's not true. Your body is very fast in reacting on situation. So if you feel it and you sense it, okay. And you can practice it for yourself in boring meetings. What am I feeling? Where do I feel it?
I think in a way it also makes you more present when you do that.
Yeah. Well, to be present, that's where it happens. That's where the collaboration is built. And there is that's the moment where trust is growing in the present.
I think the nice thing about that being in the moment, being in the present, and feeling things and observing is that one of the things we don't tend to realize is that when we're speaking, our ability to observe is reduced drastically. And so, yeah, it's almost like shut up and see.
Yeah.
Do you think that all leaders should do a coaching course or two to get some practice?
Yes. I grant everybody to learn from this, because you get a richer life. You get a life who you are, and that's what everybody wants. You get a life where you can be relaxed all the time, because you are here, you are in the present, and something's happening, you don't have to stress on front. You're here and you say, okay, yeah, not nice. Okay, what are we going to do with it? It's all the levels of stress and thinking and hurting each other. It's a way. And it's simple. You have a lot of fun. Because it's open, it's in the air.
I think one of the things I appreciate the most, and maybe it's not from a client perspective good to say that, but what I see is when I do the work that I do with leaders or with teams, the impact on their home situation, how they connect better to their children, to their spouses, I think that's some of the most beautiful changes I've seen, because that means that I know they're practicing at home, and I know they're becoming better at it because they're practicing it across the board, not only with a colleague, you know. And I don't know if you see similar stuff.
Yes, because you are not talking about a functional person, you are talking about the human, and the human is in every situation changing and feeling better. So it will open up like a flower, all situations and all connections and all relations. So that's why it is so beautiful. And that's why I grant it for all top leadership and middle management to get used to it.
If you had the power to wave a wand and grant something to middle management, what would that be?
I would wave a lot of confidence. Confidence in their abilities. Because I think a lot of energy is wasted for people inside their body, like, oh, this is okay, this is stressful, okay, or I have to do this, oh, I have to do, I, oh, I have to talk with him, or I have to arrange this. So a lot of high level breath, and if you are confident, you're, and then everything is easier. So that's what I like to wave for everybody.
So to stimulate confidence, or to help people find that moment in the present, what can their leaders do to create an environment like that?
Listening is very important. Take the time to listen, to really listen, and not with your own thoughts in your head, but really be open and interested, curious about the other. I think an important part is to build on, and not to say it should be that, but to build on the thoughts of the other, because then you are emphasizing the way of thinking of the other. Oh, that's a great idea. And what did you think how to do it? And oh, that's a part I never thought about. You feel directly stimulated, enforced, positive, get a positive enforcement by that. So I think top level leaders must be in the present to act in this way. And if someone is really open in listening, the safety to share what's really happening is growing. So these are very little instruments someone can use with an enormous impact on how people are acting. And if they are acting with confidence, it's enormous impact on their people. So I nearly want to say live for, but if top level is open and is really the human meant to be, an organization will glow, will change. And I really want to help with that.
I think one of the things for me when it comes to leadership is what I look for is helping people to change a perspective. Because once they change their perspective, no actions have to be forced. Because once you see what needs to be done, it almost feels like it has to be done. Like you cannot not do it anymore. And so for me, leadership is focused around self-reflection or the ability to self-reflect, see a new perspective, accept that it exists, and then move forward with compassion. And so I'm wondering, what would you say would be your key attributes you think we as leaders should develop?
Well, I think what you mentioned, reflection is very, very, very important. And it's a reflection all the time, every day, nearly 24 hours a day, because you are the instrument for the organization. So every step you make, everything you say has impact. And it's not a reflection to make it harder. It's a reflection to be honest with yourself and admit, oh, this was stupid what I've done, or this was not nice to her, or this was... Because then you can change and you can come back to the other and say, okay, it was the wrong tone. I'm so sorry. I did it wrong. And then you are building directly. So I think reflection is a very important thing to do. And I always ask top leaders if they have a mate in the organization, someone they can argue with or can cry with them or can be angry because everything is difficult. Just someone they trust in the organization. And that one is the one who can give a bit of light on your not seeing disabilities. Because you have your blind spots also. And it's very difficult to reflect on blind spots by yourself. So you need someone.
That's the nature of a blind spot. Yeah. It's unseen.
Yeah, that's. So I ask people, please hit me. Just under the table, but hit me if I do something I didn't know. Because you learn so much from other people. You can't see yourself acting. So if someone is such a friend in your organization to help you with that, that's great.
I hear two things, and just tell me if I'm right it or not. The on the one hand, I hear that self-reflection part, which has to do with honesty and being honest with yourself. But I also hear forgiveness. So that when somebody tells you something, you can let go of the person and focus on the content. Or that somebody else does something that hurts you, upsets you, and you can let go of that. And again, focus on where you need to go. Or that you need to forgive yourself as part of that self-reflection. Because even if you see you've made a mistake, you need to learn from it, not be stuck in the mistake.
Yes, and I think the last part is the most difficult one. Because you know you have to forgive people, so you think about it and you think, okay, I forgive you. But to forgive yourself, to really act in the wrong direction, or to be so honest to yourself, it was not okay. And how do you know it was not okay? Your body is telling you, because your stomach is like this. Your heart is, your breath is too high, and all the signs of stress are there. And then, sit, what did I do? Okay, why did I do it? Why was I so hard to that person? Oh, now I know. Looks exactly like my father. Always with that tone and quap. And then you are talking with yourself about your trauma. And your trauma shouldn't be between you and your middle management or your employee. Your trauma is yourself. So you have to fix it. And then the way is open. So it's difficult and it's important. And it's make your own instrument shiny. So you have to do something for it. You have to fix things. And that's a lot of bravery, and that's what life is.
I think that bravery is one of definitely one of the things. Yeah, sharpen your instrument or polish it up. We have to practice. Yeah. I think leadership is a practice. It's not it's not a theory.
What we didn't talk about, what for me also an important thing is, and I see it a lot, is the loneliness of leaders. Loneliness of top management, of their enormous responsibility, feeling of the responsibility. And I know for myself, if you're a leader or top management or management, middle, directly, if you are responsible for persons, it's something you have in your on your back for 24 hours, 7 days a week. It's always in your mind. How's this happening? Oh, is she better? It's all the time going on. And if you are not in a situation of sharing your thoughts and feelings with someone about your situation in organization, it can be very, very lonely. And I've seen it a lot. I spoke with people and I just say, you're feeling lonely, and tears coming out, because that is something we don't talk about.
Mm.
And especially not on high level, especially not in an organization, but it's there.
I think we also grew up in a relatively macho society where, anyway, I grew up in South Africa. And so for any man to show any vulnerability, or anybody in a leadership position to show any vulnerability, was sort of frowned upon. And I think we're moving into a different world where that is okay, but it's still hard. And I agree with you, giving people the opportunity to be vulnerable and that it is safe is such a gift. And that loneliness, being able to talk about what really frustrates you, what really angers you, what really hurts you, is sometimes really important. I've spoken to people or leaders, and we talk about everything. It from home situations all the way through to specific employees or just business in general, and what, where the fears live, you know. And I agree with you. It's one of those things that I think we underestimate, the level of loneliness that there is. And in a way, I feel sad when I talk about this, because I mean it doesn't have to be, you know. If I hear somebody is lonely, I just want to walk over and give them a hug and go like, "It's going to be okay. Don't worry, it's going to be okay," you know. And but it's hard to get to the point to just have that conversation. Yeah. And do you think people? I mean, one of the things is that comes to mind for me is there was a study done on cognitive empathy about. And that there's a genetic component. So originally the study was done to figure out if there are genes for the inability to see people's emotions for people on the spectrum or with autism. But they also discovered that it is a bell curve. And the majority of us sort of sit in the middle. And there's certain genes that are generally associated with it. Most of them are sort of on, or majority of them are on. But there are some people where all of them are switched on. So we have these people where it's less, and other side with loads of it switched on. I like to call them the Donnas. I don't know if you ever heard of a TV series called Suits, but there was this woman in there that always said, "Donna knows what you need before you even know it," you know? And I've had an experience with people with that level of cognitive empathy. It's almost scary, but it's beautiful to see. Do you think every leader deserves a Donna, especially if they're struggling with seeing how other people feel?
Well, I think Donnas should do a lot of work to help people to become a Donna. And I really hope we have management with a Donna skill in their body. Because that's the instrument we need to use. We need to learn and we need to use it. Otherwise, never something will not change. If the top leader is only someone is only from the mind, from the mental way of handling situations, and feels nothing, senses nothing, the whole organization will become mental. If there's a Donna, feels everything, the whole organization becomes a Donna. So it's very important that top-level management has the ability to be in the middle, at least, of the bell curve.
I think if you look at that, let's look at the three different types of empathy. You get to look at effective cognitive empathy, effective empathy, and compassionate empathy. Whereas cognitive empathy is the ability to see, affective empathy is the ability to feel, and compassionate empathy is the willingness to act. I see some leaders that have the affective empathy. They're able to feel and they're willing to act, but they don't necessarily see things. How do you help them to see better?
Well, it's also a skill to learn to see. So it's making people aware of what to look at. So you can make a video and say, okay, look at the people. What do you see from their body language? And you ask a group of people just to act it. Like everybody's sitting like this or sitting like this. It makes such a difference. And you can make people be aware, oh, now they are active. It's like it's like learning the social skills in a very explicit way to someone, and it's possible. You can train your mind to see it, but it costs a lot of energy to do.
I think with anything we learn, it takes a lot of energy to do in the beginning, but it becomes easier as we practice it.
That's true.
When our brain gets used to it. So the other thing you talked about earlier was triggers. In essence, we talk about traumas and triggers. All of us have triggers. How do we get people in senior leadership, or how do you get people in leadership, senior leadership, to recognize their triggers?
Well, this is normally the starting point for coaching. I'm not able to, I've got such a problems with, okay, interesting. What do you recognize? Huh? Well, look at it. Have you this feeling? Tell me about what you feel at that moment. Oh, I'm so angry. I'm thinking all day and my whole body is, I want to, well, something like that. And then I ask, okay, what was the first time you had this feeling, this physical feeling? And it takes a while, and then people, no, that's not the same. Look at it. And then you can look for it, and you can explain and live through that trauma then. And then the trigger is uncovered. No, not covered anymore. So that's the way, and people are not, they never have learned to analyze it. They have never learned what a trigger means, and that a trigger can happen in the shop, can happen at your work, and happen everywhere. And only people with a lot of problems stopping their social life are going to a psychologist or a coach to get them help. But also in working life, it happens a lot. And it's not that heavy as a trauma, but it can be really hinder you in your way of working. So it needs a bit of explanation how it works. And I remember, well, it's a long time ago, but someone reacted on me. And I thought, what a strange reaction. I didn't say something like that. And after a while, I asked, who do you see? And it was also a question, what do you mean? Who do you see when you look at me? Well, I see you. No, you see someone else. And then we made a third part, and it was a mother. And it was a mother with a very bad relationship. It was not me. It was the mother the person was talking to. And, well, you have to know this can happen. And you have to learn how to analyze it. And then you can discover what was your problem. You can discover the emotions. They are stuck with it. And if you see the emotions and then you can let it go, the trigger will disappear.
I think it's a very interesting approach. I think these triggers that get in our way can be quite destructive because it doesn't allow us to form those connections that we need with people that really need to talk to us. I was trying to explain to somebody the other day, what's the difference between a coach and a psychologist? The best explanation so far, or let's say this, the quickest one I've come up with, is if your life is a car, the coach is there to help explain to you that you actually own the steering wheel and you can decide where you want to go, to help you figure out what the destinations you want to go and what in the car might hamper you, but they're not the mechanic. They're not fixing the car. When you go to a psychologist, they can look at all the technical aspects of the car and go like, yeah, here's a few things we can help you with to fix the car. What do you believe? What's the difference between coaching and psychology, and how can that help us as leaders?
Well, it's a beautiful metaphor to use. Coaching is from the present to the future. You are looking for how you go on. And therapy or a psychologist will help you from to understand what hinders you in your daily life. And for me, I always used this explanation, future and solving the past. But to be honest, I really think it's about to become the person you want to be yourself. And you need it both. So for me, the boundaries are not that clear anymore. If we are in a coaching conversation and you are talking about future, and I feel a lot of anxiety with you, I will talk about it because it's hindering you to grow to that place. And then how I work right now, I ask, do you want to investigate it deeply? And someone can choose for it. So that's the way I do it right now. So for me, the line is not that hard. But it's true. Coaching is about present and future. And therapy, psychology is about understanding what you're hindering you to go to the future.
I think it's... They say that the line is not as hard. I just think as coach, I always try to make sure that I do not go sit on the chair of a therapist. If somebody's needs help that is beyond my skill, I need to recognize that and move the person on. You know, it's an ethics thing.
Well, it's for me the same. So I'm always open about what I do in coaching, but I have also a therapy background, and I ask people. So they can choose for themselves. They have the steering wheel. So it's their responsibility what they want to do. But I agree, you must be clear about it. You can't fuss around because that feels unsafe.
I think it's as coaches and therapists, we'll have ethics that guide us. Do you think there's a new set of ethics that have appeared over the last few years for leadership as well? Or it may have been something that leaders that was already there, but people didn't listen to or do?
Well, I think that, like we started this whole conversation, that the world is changing. So the ethics are changing also. Look at Me Too. It's quite a new ethic. You must be aware of what you're doing and how you're acting and etc. So, because of the climate change, because of the sustainability, we want to go on with our beautiful planet. So the ethics for that are changing, and it's in the organizations itself. They are looking for sustainable, healthy solutions for the companies and fabrics, etc. So all that, those ethics are changing, and by that, it's also how we relate to each other. And I think the world we are living in right now is, well, the most interesting period, I think, to live, because we are experiencing a time change and perspective change and a new anchoring. And we don't know what it will be, because we don't know if we have a world with a war or if we are wise enough to to look for another way to overcome it. But all those ethics are changing right now. And that's why it's so heavy time for a lot of people. There is happening so much.
I think you were talking about middle management earlier, and what you're saying is we're living in a time of constant change. It just feels to me as if that is a place where middle management tends to live, where there's constant change and constant responsibilities at multiple levels to your peers, to those above you and those that you lead. What do you think we can learn from a middle management maybe that can help us in times of change? Or maybe an ability to deal with change?
Well, it's interesting the question you ask. That's what I was thinking. What can we learn from middle management? And that question is, what we can learn is they know how to cope with all the change. That is not necessarily the same as changing. So I see a lot of middle management put their head down and wait for the new direction, for the new reorganization. Okay, I wait. I've done this. I've seen this. It happens before. Okay, a new external consultant telling me how I have to think, what we have to do. So what I learn is the thoroughness to overcome all those changes. But it's not necessarily the best way of handling it. I see a lot of puzzled, tired, stressful middle management and not very happy in their places. So what I learned is all the coping mechanism to overcome and to stay on your chair of middle management.
What do you think we can do to help people embrace change or to move towards a new future?
Well, we always talk about change as a transactional fact. And change is the flow of life. And it's like the waves in the ocean. They come and they go and they... Every day. Always. So change is always. So I think we shouldn't use the word we are going to change. It seems like everything is like this. Now we're going to do that. No, everything is changing. So how are you handling it? How are you going with the flow? What's the best direction? And that makes leadership quite different. Because leaders also want to have, okay, the plan, we start with A, then B, then the milestone C, and then it's okay, then it's, we are finished. No, it's just a little part in the flow. So how are you acting and how are you facilitating your organization to be able to act in the flow? And are you able, big leader, to give the direction of the flow?
Make a statement and tell me what you think about it. In times of change or great upheaval, it's important for us to find the light at the end of the tunnel. Let's call it the vision forward. And the difference between hope and hopelessness is knowing the steps to get there.
Yes, I do agree, but I agree in maybe a bit different. Because everything is flowing so fast all the time, I think you have to look for anchor points nearby. You don't have to look for the anchor points in over 3 months, because over 3 months the world has a new elements of issues you have to think about and incorporate in your direction. So I always say, okay, look just before your legs and look for your stones you can stand on. Okay, we are standing. Yes, we are not sinking. We are not drowning. Where are the next steps? So in that way, I agree with you. But I don't believe anymore in big Gantt charts with big plannings. I believe in the moon spot. I believe in the direction. And with a good narrative from top leaders and a felt narrative, so you feel what someone wants you to do, then you have the direction and the flow will go that way. And you make it safe and you make it solid if you say, okay, this is what we know now and this is what we agree with. Okay, now we can stand on it. Okay, tomorrow we go, the next step is we change the stone a bit to the left and then we change this. And that's also the agile way of working. It's a little steps ahead.
I think it's important thing that you mentioned there is that next step, that next sort of standing stone in, or let's call it the next step across the river. You've got this whole river rushing around you and creating all kinds of upheaval and sort of threatening to sweep you away. In a world of upheaval, and just finding that next step to cross the river, the next stone that you can stabilize on. I think it's also important for us to realize that in times of stress, our executive functions are being affected. So some of the stuff we see a lot now with employees are going like, give me clarity. It seems to be a very big question. It usually has to do with which is the next thing I need to do. So task initiation that's impacted, things like priorities and planning that's impacted because people just want to know, what am I supposed to do now? Because they tend to lose sight of the total chain of where we might be going, especially in a time of stress, the focus becomes really narrow. And so one of the things that when I work with leaders, middle management teams is to say, well, okay, if that has to be the focus, you need to figure out what that step is. You need to help your employee figure out, where do I put my foot next? Because as long as you don't do that, it's really hard for them to figure it out themselves in a stressful scenario.
Yes, I agree totally, because this is situational leadership. This is looking at the context. And if the context is hostile or very unclear, you maybe must say, okay, Ekstein, you have to do right now this. So it's a very task-oriented way of leadership. And in crisis, this happens. Because the context is so waving around and there's so much to do and you don't know where to look at and where you put your feet. So you say, okay, there is it. And there's just this, and then it's enough. And what I experienced, if you say, okay, we are now on the stone, relax. Breathe out. Because then you have the energy to look for the next stone to find. So you don't, you won't be afraid if you're crossing the violent river. No, you want to stand there and say, okay, it's okay. Now we look for the next one. And then you get the joy to the adventure of crossing the river. But it's true. Sometimes you need to give it.
I think
the clarity. Yeah.
I think what you were saying earlier about Agile and Scrum and these kind of ways of working, it is that incremental, that looking for the next step. But you're also talking about the moonshot. So know the general direction where you're going, but help people figure out what the next step is. You don't have to give them 200 steps in advance. Just make sure that people know what the next step is. I think especially now that we're in a situation with this hybrid scenario, we have so many changes in the world. I mean, the war in Ukraine is not helping. We're still not completely out of COVID. I mean, it's still going around. Infections are still rampant. And we don't know and the climate change. And I mean, I live in Amsterdam. I don't know if in 10 years from now, my feet will still be dry. You know, we don't know how fast the stuff is going to happen. And so we have all these insecurities, and giving people just that one bit of security for the next step is what I believe what we need to do to create hope in this world. Just help people with what is the next thing I can do to make my world a better place. Do you think that's a skill that can be taught?
And it's something, a skill, the transfer of the helpfulness of this skill is the best if someone experiences it by him or herself. So if you are facilitating a team or in a coaching, you can help someone to experience the feeling of, okay, now you're on the stone. And that's why I said, just breathe. Because then you feel the relaxation. And then you feel the confidence coming back. And okay, oh, it's a lot of waves here, but I can stand here. And I'm able to do this. So then you are growing. So it's really something you can learn. But it's difficult for top leadership to know what to tell about the direction. That's quite different and also a bit difficult. And I don't know exactly how to learn that for top leadership.
We know that actually from some of the research papers that cortisol is a stress hormone getting us ready for adrenaline or keeping us at that edge, ready. On the other side, oxytocin helps us to connect with people and seems to be counterindicated for cortisol. So the more oxytocin we have, we tend to have less cortisol. That to me sort of indicates that as human beings, we are social. We need to have that connection with each other. And where we started and we talked about creating this context for leaders to talk and be vulnerable together and be authentic in a way, but also say, well, this is what I don't know, or this is what I need help with, allows us to create that context of feeling that connection and feeling as if we're part of something bigger. I'm just wondering if we want to be creative, creativity or stepping out of the box is out of the box of creative thinking, is part of those executive functions. Might it not be that we need to create these places of vulnerability or honesty in top leadership to help them to find their vision?
Yes. Well, difficult to answer this question. I think creativity and knowing the direction is not for every person the best skill. So real thinking, real out-of-the-box thinking, real creating from nothing to something very beautiful and worthwhile is a skill not for everyone. So if you don't have that skill and you are a top leader, it's difficult to make your mind open to think about it. So you have to arrange people around you who can help you to be creative, and you can taste it and okay, oh, that feels good. Yes, it looks good. So you need sources outside of you to do this. And why I'm saying this, because I can see you looking for why is she doing this? Oh, pardon. I think a lot of organizations have top level in the transactional way of thinking. And in we have to have the profit, we have to have this. And I think also that kind of outcomes will change in the next, I hope, 20 years, but it will change because it's not about profits. It's about what do you do in this world and what's important in this world. Well, that's such another way of thinking. And then you have to really think in a different way. I think a lot of people on top level are not used to do it. I can't say able, but I hope they are able to make this skill flourish.
I think it's a very good thing you mentioned there. It's you're not the first person to tell me this actually this week. I had a conversation with a friend of mine earlier this week. He tends to work in really high level sort of projects that he for transformational projects for companies. So I asked him, what do you think is the biggest thing that you struggle with senior leadership? And he said, a clear vision, not even compelling, just clear. You know, where do you want to go? I'm willing to take you there. I have the skills to take you there. Just be clear. What do you want? What do you want out of this? He has this questioning technique that he uses. He calls it shaking the Christmas tree, where he asks questions just to see what has been thought of and what has not, just to stimulate people to clarify what they really want. And I think it's interesting that we come from two completely different perspectives and we come to the same conclusions. It's not about the big vision. It's about the clarity, the actionable, you know. Do you believe
and,
that too?
What comes with it is the bravery to dare to be clear. In a world with such a lot of things happening, so many stakeholders you have to manage and to keep as your friends, to be clear, say, okay, well, this is the line I think is important. Wow. And you have the responsibility because you have 3,000 people behind you with all their families. And you are saying this is the direction. So it takes a lot. That's why I say I'm not a person to help to make the vision really clear. I can help to make brave enough, but it is something big.
I think what I also find interesting is I think we come from you and I think come from a similar place, slightly different background, slightly different perspectives. But we come from the place of people, you know, not from the place of purely process, or more connection instead of just transaction. What I find really fascinating is to see this change, but also to see how we tend to still describe leadership in the form of behavior instead of being.
And that's what we talked about. It's being the human you are. And if you are confident with yourself, you feel free to express what you feel, you feel free to be vulnerable, then your behavior goes to the future you want. But if that's all closed and put together and not shared, what kind of behavior are you acting with? I think it's necessary to do this. So it's not the real thing. And that's the world we are living in now. That's the, I hope, the vanishing way of working. And we are growing in be there in the present.
I think that's a great place for us to end this conversation. Because I think that's a great tip for all leaders out there. Be in the moment. Be in the present. Feel it. Look for the next stepping stone. And help your people find the clarity of vision on how to get to the other side of the river. Thank you so much for your time today, Rinika. I really appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much, Xtine. I really love this conversation. I'm honored to be invited here. Thank you.
I wonder if Rinika knows how blessed people are to work with her. And I'm not just gushing. It's always a genuine pleasure to talk to her and find her insights very valuable. I think today's talk for me specifically talking about middle management and the impact of loneliness in senior management has yet again shone a light for me on that we tend to forget that leaders are just people. When we lead organizations, we also need our support. We also need those people that fight for us, that'll tell us we're doing an okay job. As long as they're not yes-sayers and the people that can understand our vulnerabilities, but at the same time also be honest and straight up with us. I think those kind of people need to be cultivated, especially ones with high cognitive empathy that can show you things that you may not be able to see. That's another episode, and that's a wrap. And till the next time, be safe, stay safe, and lead by example.
Now go out there, be exponential, and do something nice for someone else.
You can find us on the web by going to podcast.exponentially.me. We will also find additional media resources and some amazing insights.